So this latest study builds off a long line of work where we've tried to unpack these quirks of Americans' approach to work. Quirks, not in the sense that they're good or bad, but they appear to be this culturally unique approach, which involves putting aside one's personal life while in the realm of the professional.
All right. So how did you construct your research? And
yeah. So in this study, I mean, ever since I've been in the academia, I've sort of found it odd that people really separate their personal and their professional lives. So it's not something to mention that you skateboard or you're in a band at night or anything personal. And so this norm of putting aside your personal life seemed to be something that appeared across a number of industries, but didn't resonate with what I saw traveling around the world, working in about 30 different countries.
So you're saying you'd go to other countries and people were very comfortable talking about what they do Saturday night or like me with pictures?
Yes. Yeah. So the idea is coworkers would see each other outside the workplace. Mm-hmm. Some might even go on vacation together. And Americans sort of after the whistle blew would go their own ways and would have different networks, some for church, some for sports.
Got it.
And keep these things separate. So what we wanted to do in this study was we wanted to just tap people's mental image of what was a professional and what was unprofessional. So what we did was we gave people these color diagrams of a cubicle, an empty cubicle, and these self-adhesive stickers of just about anything that you can imagine would be in the cubicle, from a shredder, a computer,
sure,
staplers, photos of one's family, religious objects, sports objects, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then we gave each person a description of the employee who occupied this office. It was somebody in their 30s who was very productive, but they weren't considered very professional. Or another group got that same description, but they were told the person is considered very professional. So then we simply allowed them to reconstruct what they believed that person's office looked like. So we didn't prime or push them to do anything one way or the other, just said reconstruct your mental image of it.
And were these bosses or HR people?
This was a collection of individuals who were working full-time who were taking evening courses at the University of Michigan, our evening MBA program.
All right.
So they came from a number of different industries. And also half of them had not been born in the U.S. and worked in the U.S. their whole life.
Gotcha.
They had been here in different amounts of time. When we looked at it, what we found differentiated the professional from unprofessional cubicles was the proportion of personal items represented in that cubicle. So it was okay to have about 15 to 20% of the content to be personal effects. Beyond that, really captured what people thought was unprofessional. And so on one hand, it may resonate as obvious because it's a cultural norm, and within the U.S., this is that culture.
Mm-hmm.
But when we looked at people who had not spent their entire professional life in the U.S., we found that this was not something that resonated with them.
Wasn't a problem for them.
No. They had definitions of professionalism, but it did not involve separating your personal and your professional life.
And why do you think that is? Why are we so intent in America in having that that border, that firewall, if you will?
Yeah. What's interesting, in a lot of business, we try to understand why other cultures do what they do, why the Chinese negotiate as they do, why the Latvians approach entrepreneurship the way they do, so on and so forth. And rarely do we turn the light on our own culture. And it turns out the U.S. is not a cultural vacuum. We have a rich, deep, long-lasting culture. And my earlier work established that one of the defining features of our approach to professional relationships is something that was laid in place by the founding fathers of the culture. The strong Protestant ethic really had two components. One is this idea that work is your moral obligation.
Right.
We're very familiar with that.
Yeah.
But it also contains this notion that you're supposed to put aside personal relational concerns while working. So the U.S. in its very early days was at the forefront of doing business with strangers, people who didn't share your religion. If there was a business transaction to be had, that was okay. And that also leads to a lot of success because you're not bounding your market.
Mm-hmm.
One of the quirks of that is it helps us develop in this culture, better than in many other cultures, the ability to ignore emotional and relational concerns at work. We focus on what people say, not how they say it. We expect people to deliver bad news in a very direct, frank way. We expect people to call us by our first names and ignore status differences. Now, none of this is done to perfection.
Yes.
But compared to other cultures, it's just a very different approach.
So if you come from, let's say, India, and you wind up working in an office here in Southeast Michigan, you may have a different sense of propriety than your American coworkers.
Yeah. Well, that actually, you get to the real heart of the study. It wasn't just about documenting a facet of American culture, but trying to understand the implications for cross-cultural business relations.
Yes.
So when we invite colleagues from other parts of the world to work on a project with us, or people have come, we've recruited talent from abroad.
Mm-hmm.
As true in any culture, trying to learn the unspoken rules and taboos is critical to one's success. And in our other study in this paper, we found that when people violate this norm in a subtle way, simply as talking about how with a new customer you might mention, well, let me back up and perhaps give you the study. So what we did is in this another experiment, we gave recruiters from around the U.S. the essay and resume of a potential applicant. And we said, could you evaluate this? And in the essay, the person described how they would build rapport with a possible client.
All right.
And in one, the essays were exactly the same, except in one essay, the person said, well, if I saw that they had a nice window, I might sort of compliment them and say, what a great view you have in your office. In another condition, for another applicant, it said, well, if I saw some family photos, I might comment and say, well, nice family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, making a comment about another person's family significantly reduced the odds the recruiter would hire you or even give you a second interview.
That's stunning to me.
It's a taboo. It's a taboo that you're supposed to know. And if you don't, it affects your career, which means if you're not in the know, then your career prospects could be damaged.
Yes, yes. So it makes me wonder over the years as I've been happily tacking up photos around my desk and wherever I can find a space. You know, for me, that makes me as a worker happy as if I, you know, I'm working away and I can glance up and see a picture of my grandson. It just kind of gives me that lift.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is that could be in the long run something that is detrimental.
Yeah. I mean, we ask people how they're doing and maybe a little bit, and it's okay for someone to say, you know, family's doing well, but you don't want to hear more than that.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Oh, well, little Johnny's going off and playing this. Okay, that's too much.
Yeah, too much. We don't want to hear how he did in travel soccer.
Yeah. I mean, and so, I mean, I've learned in my own career, don't talk to colleagues about being in an indie band or going snowboarding and so forth. And what I found talking to other professionals, if they've also figured out workarounds to this. So what they do, and I think when we were going by your cubicle, mm-hmm. if I can share.
Feel free. I'm going to put a picture up.
is that they may have their cubicle look very professional, very few personal effects from the perspective of somebody walking by their cubicle. But on the wall that the other person couldn't see is plastered with photos and maybe funny calendars and so forth.
Yeah, so which is kind of what I've done. You can't see as you come in. You have to make a big walk around and see my exuberance and sharing my life.
You know, an interesting thing that we found about this is that it's not that we found Americans endorse and prefer this separation of work and family or professional and personal, but they think that everyone else cares about it. So there's a little bit of this pluralistic ignorance that, well, not I may not care about it, but other people care about it, and therefore I have to follow that norm. And a lot of aspects of culture work that way. So we're not finding people love this. In fact, there's other research which suggests people want, as you mentioned, the ability to bring one's personal life in the mm-hmm. professional and to mm-hmm. be whole and so forth. Other people, of course, do love to separate it. They love being able to go to the office, much like when you start a new school or a new mm-hmm. job, you have a fresh start, and keep those things separate. So there is a tension in the culture between this segmentation being very strong and favored versus it not being that way.
So should I take down some of my family and Roger Daltrey photos or all of them?
Never. You should do what you want.
There you go. Jeffrey Sanchez-Burks is an associate professor of management and organizations at the Ross School of Business at U of M. His study on mixing or not mixing our personal and professional lives will be published in the Journal of Organizational Behavior. Very interesting to talk with you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.